One time, a group of us went to, we were planning a program in Seattle area for honoring persons who had done substantial service or contributed to the temple or one of those kind of things. Just an appreciation kind of event, and the plan was to spend just some devotional time together in a quiet place. Anyway, so the Hari Vilas came up with this nice plan to go to the northwestern part of the state, of the state of Washington, where it is said that 360 days of year there's sunshine because of just where the location is, and there's a Gulf Stream that comes, so it's always nice and warm. And so we went there and it rained. But Bhakti Marg Swami was with us, and it was really nice. He's lots of fun, and he got everybody doing charades, and you know, he would be telling a story just by with his hands and his body, and they would then like fill in the blanks, and he would just tell the whole Krishna, just a whole pastime. People would pick another pastime, and he would enact it out, and just absorbing ourselves in thought of Krishna in different ways. So one of the things that the devotees, because there were some young devotees, like these boys and the girls, they wanted to get outside and do something. So there's a lighthouse at the end of a long, narrow walkway. Just a wide enough piece of land that only one person can walk, and if you didn't walk on this side, you're in the ocean, and on that side, you're in the ocean. Really narrow. And it goes for several miles. It doesn't have a nice name either. It's called a spit. S-P-I-T. Same word. But at the end, there was a lighthouse. And so the venturesome group went off and went to visit the lighthouse. And no one got wet. Everyone stayed in the middle of the path, and they went to the lighthouse. And then they went up the stairs of the lighthouse, went up at the top of the stairs, and that lonely man out there at the end of the lighthouse, fortunately he was friendly, and he was really happy to see people, not just pigeons and seagulls, you know, people. And, you know, showed them around and told them the whole history of the place and once upon a time, da 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 da, and so many battles and da 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 da. And then back, and they come all the way back. Ready for more kirtan and, you know, different devotional activities. So the reason I'm telling you this is, I didn't go, I was doing something else. But then I was thinking, to the stories they told, what's a lighthouse for? It's so that boats that are passing can know, here's land. And it's at the end of this long strip of land, spit, so that they wouldn't run into the piece of land. They could, because it went way out into the ocean. So at night you can, if there's a storm, you can know where you can get to some land in safety because there's a lighthouse. Similarly, we're a long way from Krishna Prema. At least I can say I'm a long way from Krishna Prema. But if we have an idea of where the lighthouse is, where that light coming in this darkness is, you just keep following the light and you'll get there. Oh, the topic here is steadiness. And after hearing about quality chanting in Prabhupada's description of what quality chanting is, and just chant. But off in the distance, there's this quality chanting. And in between Krishna Prema and just chant, there's an intermediate step, and we can think of that intermediate step called steadiness, or in Sanskrit, it's called nishtha. That's the topic, steadiness. Tomorrow, some of you have chanted 64 rounds before, and I can tell you from my experience, it's always a different experience. Whatever you've done, it's different. It's different, and it's different, and it's different. So, be ready for a different experience tomorrow. And sometimes, during the course of chanting 64 rounds, you'll find, we call hills and valleys. Hill is when everything seems to be going just smoothly. And everybody knows what the valley is. That's what it usually is like. It's the struggle. Or, the taste is not there. Something is just not happening properly. And, continuing forward towards that lighthouse, knowing that if I just keep going, I'll get there, will help you. Say a few things about that steadiness. One is when you think of steadiness, you say, wow, that devotee is really steady. In the early days, there was this phrase that Prabhupada used a couple of times, and so then it became part of our ISKCON vernacular. That devotee is fixed up. Remember that one? That devotee is fixed up. He's fixed up, Prabhu. So, when we think of someone that's steady or fixed up, what do we think of? Well, maybe they're fixed in their vow of chanting 16 rounds. Fixed. Or they stay with their service very regularly or readily. Like Janadivas and Pankajangri are examples. They've been in Pujaris in Mayapur since Mayapur existed, since ISKCON Mayapur existed, doing the same service. Very steady in their service. There's a Pujari in Mamgachi, one of the places in Sridhar Mayapur, Navadvip, who was just a little boy, a 10-year-old, 12-year-old young boy, when Bhaktisiddhanta first established that temple, and Bhaktisiddhanta told him to become the Pujari, and he's been there since. He's still the Pujari. That's a lot of years. He's so old now. His body is hunched over. Jadu Thakur, they call him. But that's all he knows is the service that his spiritual master gave him. He's just been doing that service. He's steady. Or another way of thinking of steady is someone who consistently extends care to other devotees. So you say some particular quality, characteristic of their service. Steady and devotee care. That's a nice one. Commonly, those are things that we think about when we think of steadiness. And those are all about behaviors, like something that's outside. But something that's outside is dependent upon something that's inside. And I want to speak about internal steadiness. There's a nice verse, one of many nice verses in Srimad Bhagavatam, where Sutta Goswami is speaking about steadiness in devotional service. Nashtaprayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke. bhaktir bhavati naishtuki. So the verse begins, nashtaprayeshu abhadreshu, and where the verse is translated, this is one of another common question asked, through devotional service, nashtaprayeshu abhadreshu, all that is inauspicious within the heart is destroyed almost to nil. So people ask, how come almost to nil? Why not to nil? You had that question before when you're reading that verse? Nashtakayeshu avadreshu. If devotional service is so powerful, why not completely destroyed? And the answer is, it's describing a stage. In the nine stages of bhakti, there's a stage called nishtha. Or in that stage of nishtha, it comes after, what does it come after? Anartha Nivritti. Anartha Nivritti comes after Bhajanakriya. And Bhajanakriya comes after Sadhusanga. And Sadhusanga comes after preliminary faith. So faith in association of devotees, Bhajanakriya, and then Anartha Nivritti, and then following Anartha Nivritti is this stage of nishtha, where unwanted things, impure things in the heart are mostly gone. Mostly gone. Prayeshu is the word. Practically to nil. Mostly gone. Abhadreshu. So, Prabhupada, there's a famous lecture where Prabhupada said what that means. Or he said it was almost gone. Then paused and said, 75%. So how does it work? 75% the mind is agitated. Excuse me, 25% the mind is agitated. The senses are, not properly engaged. But 75% the heart is cleansed so much that there's a very powerful flow of devotional service, and that powerful flow of devotional service is so strong that even something else comes up, the 75% prevails. It washes away that impure thing that arises from time to time. So strong. There's steadiness. Steadiness internally, steadiness of the heart, steadiness of the flow of devotional service from the heart. So then there's steadiness in the mind and steadiness in the senses. That's it. It's a degree of purity, internal purity. And one cannot, the point I'd like to make here is, one cannot attain that by other than spiritual purity. That's steadiness. It's exclusive to bhakti. Because other practices, like Vishvamitra Muni and Sobari Muni and, extreme austerities we can't do. But with the tinkling of Menaka's ankle bells and Shobari Muni seeing fish underwater as he was meditating underwater. Can anybody do that? Meditate underwater? For years at a time? He can't do that. He had the capacity to do that, but he became agitated. Seeing two fish copulating and thinking, his meditation finished. His mind became agitated. Because curbing the senses is not the same as purification. The purification is a whole other achievement. And that comes from devotional service and the process of chanting. Abhadras, the impurities of heart, become cleansed. We sometimes find the quality of dutifulness also makes steadiness. And the dutifulness is something that we find, aside from people, we find even in other species of life. How do mother ducks know how to take care of the little ducklings? They don't go to mother duck school. They're very dutifully looking after their dependents. So mothers and fathers dutifully look after their children. And that's nice. But the steadiness that we're speaking about is not circumstantial. It's not dependent upon any material event, and it can't be checked by any material obstacle. That's also something that's described in those early verses of the first canto. Ahoitaki apratiyata yayatva supersedati. Devotional service, when it's satisfying to the self, it doesn't, on this end and this end, there's nothing material. There's nothing material that can start it. There's nothing material that can stop it. That's devotional service. That's satisfying. Coming to the stage where there's a satisfaction or a steadiness in one's practice of chanting, steadiness in devotional service. There's certainly the upholding of one's vow, like Prabhupada was speaking about in that Nairobi morning walk conversation about quality chanting. You do it just because you're told to do, or you agree to do, and under the order of scripture and the spiritual master, you do. Dutifully. Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks about the distinction between duty, which is what it is, it's done out of obligation, in the sense that this will purify me. But when one becomes purified, that's this nashta prayeshu abhadreshu. When one becomes purified, then it's not governed by duty or regulation. It's coming from the soul. Devotional service comes from the soul. It's still in the sadhana bhakti stage. One is still governed by rules and regulations in the sadhana bhakti stage. But even beyond the sadhana bhakti stage, when devotees become like Sanatana Goswami or Rupa Goswami or Haridas Thakur, so advanced, they don't need rules and regulations to steady themselves and to purify themselves. Nonetheless, they continue to follow. Such nice examples we have from those perfected souls. Not just because Krishna told them so. It just becomes so much part of their nature. It's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Sanatana Goswami's regulations were like lines in stone. Note that lines in stone don't move. So when he was very, very old, he had this practice that he would circumambulate Govardhan Hill every day. And there are two paths. There's an inner and outer path. And he traveled the outer path every day. He was so old, it was very difficult. But he had this vrata. So one day, Krishna appeared before him and said, Sanatana, please don't do this. You don't require, you're on the perfect platform. You don't need to do that. Please, if everyone is disturbed seeing you keeping this vow. And he spoke to Krishna saying, I must. I made a vow. I must. Even Krishna was trying to persuade him. He said, I must. So Krishna said, then here's a small piece of Govardhan, stone from Govardhan, and I'll put my foot in it and place the imprint of my walking stick, and you just circumambulate this 5-6 times, and that's the same as walking around the whole of Govardhan. So then his breath will change because Krishna gave him that nice alternative. And then when he left his body by the side of Manasi Ganga, his body was taken to his samadhi, that's near Madan Mohan Temple, in a grand procession, and the Govardhan Shila was taken to the Radha Damodar Temple. And for a few rupees, they'll be glad to show you that nice Shiva of Sanatana Goswami. Right in front, big Shiva. Right in front, where the altar is. Commonly they have it covered with a cloth. And the cloth magically comes off if there's a few rupees in the hand of the pujari. And so many. Raghunath Das Goswami, similarly, fixed in his vows that he would offer so many, not only chant so many rounds a day, but offer so many obeisances a day. And several hundred times per day he would offer obeisances, and so he would go before each of the altars at Radha Kund and take darshan of the deity and pay obeisances to the deity. And he became so, his body became so old and feeble that after he paid obeisances, he couldn't get back up again. So people would come and help him get back up again and plead with him, Raghunath, please don't do this. You're too old. You don't. And Raghunath would say, yes, yes. And go to the next temple and pay obeisances and not be able to get back up again. Fixed in his, so steadiness, not from something outside, not just dutifulness or, you know, he's got a certain nature. It's from inside. It's a internal condition of purity that allows one to then be externally steady. And the chanting of the holy name helps us with that internal, and then in turn external. So I want to spend a little time speaking about these three different categories or symptoms of spiritual steadiness. Mind, speech. So mind, when there's purity, by definition, there's less contamination. And when there's less contamination, there's less tendency for the mind to wander or be distracted or be disturbed or have interest in something other. So that means when there's purity, the mind becomes more steady. You'll experience tomorrow, most likely. You'll experience stretches of time when your chanting is going very nicely. It's mercy of Krishna. Chanting is going very nicely. May those stretches of time stay for a long period of time. But commonly when devotees give their feedback, something happens. Some distraction, some interruption, something, and then everything changes. And then it's not the same, then it's a struggle. You'll see when we have the feedback. What was your experience like? When there's purity, those stages of steadiness of mind absorbed in the holy name endure longer, simply because there's purity. I'm tempted to give, there's a very nice explanation, very, almost like poetry, very beautiful explanation given by Narada Muni to King Prachinibari about where disturbances in the mind come from. I'll just quickly, it's very nice. He says disturbances in the mind come from stored desires in the heart that they're just in a dormant state for a long period of time due to something that happened that-a-way, so in time, in the past. Either in this life in the past or previous life in the past or previous life times. So there's some activity with that, let's say previous life. In that previous life, some activity that was based upon the material desire. We did something. We did something, and then there's an impression from that something we did. The senses experienced something. An impression is made. Like a, you know, camera. Take a snapshot, and the lens opens and closes, and so there's an impression. And the impression is stored in the mind. And it's a very, Bill Gates could never design something like this. It's, or any of his workers, the storage system of that impression, stored subtly and in a seed-like condition, just stays and stays and stays and stays. And if that body is given up, then it's carried with a subtle body into the next body and it just stays. It's all these seeds of impressions that are going to come out at the right time in the form of desire. So the clock is moving, tick, 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 and some part of the Krishna's plan, or the bigger plan of how the time energy moves things, suddenly that stored impression comes out in the form of a desire. He gives the example of a water arising from a pond, within a pond. For a visual person, I like this example. We've been to situations where we've been in situations where we're via a lake or a pond, say a pond, smaller body of water, and you're looking over this nice pond, and some water, some bubble arises. It just kind of wiggles its way to the surface of the water, and it sits there at the top of the surface of the water, and then it bursts and it goes into the air. So he explains that within the mud there's some organic matter, and the organic matter is decomposing and fermenting, and some gas, some carbon dioxide or whatever it is released. And because it's under the mud, it doesn't come to right away. It just builds up and builds up. And when at a certain point it builds up enough pressure, it bursts through the mud, goes through the water, to the surface of the water in it, to the air, and then it merges with the air. We've all seen it. The mind is like that. There's, like the organic matter in the mud, there's desires or impressions of past activity that are desires of soon to manifest. There's all these terminologies about karma also, parabdha karma and aparabdha karma in different stages, kutam, bija, and so forth. So the ones that the karmas that we're experiencing now, that's called parabdha karma, and then the ones that are just waiting to happen. So all the desires that serve to disturb the mind, when is it going to end? Because we have all this past activity, we have a big, huge storage pile of impressions from so many activities that are going to keep coming out and keep coming out. So go back to the pond example. Take a stick and stir the mud at the bottom of the pond. What happens? All this big muddy thing and all the stored up gas comes right to the surface. And then mud settles and everything's very peaceful. Except there's still some organic stuff still in the mud. The nature of the process of devotional service is Chito Dharpana Marjanam, up to the root cause of material existence. All of that, all the desires, the stored impressions, and the potential for doing more such things is removed. How? Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam. The tendency to serve Krishna takes its place. So rather than misdirecting. So we take the responsibility for our past free will choices, and part of that responsibility is desires that aren't wholesome, and they'll take us away from Krishna and stuff like that. So the process of chanting makes the heart pure so that there can be steadiness of the mind. So even when those, like the 75%, 25% thing that I mentioned, if the flow of from the heart or from the soul, the desire to be in service to Krishna, comes in contact or is in contention with the desire to do something away from Krishna, the flow of devotional service is so strong, it checks that other tendency. It just doesn't happen. That's called the nishtha stage. So the mind, now steadiness of mind is where the mind has become sufficiently pure through passing through the anartanirvritti process or stage of bhakti. That steadiness is there. The mind remains in one place. Even there is provocation. There's something that agitates it. Dhira is the word. Sometimes Prabhupada translated that as sober. That probably means something different in Texas. But, you know, I was looking at one of those exams you have to take for a driver's license, and one of the questions is, what's the percentage of alcohol content that's at the borderline? You're over here and it's okay, and you're over there and, you know, driving under the influence. And over there is the sober. So it's still some alcohol, but you can still stay on the road. Your judgment is not so terribly impaired that you can't stay on the road or crash into other people. So here's some examples of Srila Prabhupada of steadiness. I think I heard this one from Bhadri Narayan Prabhu, and I think he heard it from someone that was with me. Anyway, Prabhupada is sitting at his desk. I think it was Los Angeles, and he received a phone call, and the phone call had to do with something with property transaction. He was on the phone for a while, and then Prabhupada took a pad of paper and was jotting something down on the pad of paper during the phone conversation about a property transaction. And, you know, then the call ended, and the pad of paper stayed on his desk. So the devotee that came along to clean his room was curious what Prabhupada was writing on that pad of paper. It was the Maha Mantra. You might think, you know, something with numbers and, you know, dollars and square feet and something. It was the Maha Mantra. Because it's fixed. Even when doing worldly things, his mind is fixed. And another devotee that was giving Prabhupada, another Prabhupada story, fixed mind. Prabhupada liked those who massaged him to give, do it very strongly. And, you know, he would chastise them if it wasn't strong enough. It had to be very, not like that, and he would show them. And so he wanted it very strong. So one devotee was describing, Prabhupada would sit. He didn't lie down. He would sit and do the massage like that. And he, not intentionally, but pushed extra hard on his back. And as he pressed extra hard, he heard very clearly, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava. You know, what's going on in Prabhupada's mind while he's receiving, his mind is fixed in the holy name. Or another one, I've been listening to the morning walks and room conversations, that part of Prabhupada's recordings. And there's a whole series in Juhu where Dr. Patel, and everyone laughs, it's just to hear Dr. Patel in Juhu. It's like he was this Mr. Purvapaksha, you know, the contrarian. Whatever Prabhupada would say, he would say something else. And it was like that. It was nice wrestling. So, several times in between, Prabhupada would just, Hare Nama. While engaging, like Bhishma Dev, he was engaging in so many activities. Millions, it's described in the ninth chapter of the first canto. So many services in the honor of his royal duties, but internally fixed on Krishna. And at the point when the external duties were finished, he wasn't bored. He was still absorbed in his internal activity. And when purity is there, that internal activity is going on. The devotees that like kirtan, I'm sure Vatsal can say, yes, it's true, before I even explain the whole thing. But devotees that really like kirtan, when they're driving, they're having kirtan. Just like melodies are going in the mind and you're singing softly. And like devotees that are really experienced kirtan devotees that I've been in cars with, that's what they do. They're it's like you're playing a drum on your knee there. It's just, kids are sitting there in class, they're like Madhunga playing. They're in kirtan. You're very peaceful. It happens that way. Because of the, not just habit, but absorption. Especially as purity comes. It's not just, when the mind is pure, that flow of the mind to the holy name and to the process of devotional service and this spontaneous desire to do service. That's one of the qualities of steadiness. Steadiness of mind. Steadiness of speech. There are some do nots, but you know, one of the characteristics of those who are steady in their speech is they don't, you won't find them speaking some prajalpa, like yada 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 stuff. Just, you know, useless conversation. Rather, there's a cultivation point, but there's also a natural kind of speech that serves to be elevating. Advaita Acharya is here, I think I'll share some appreciation of Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. When I went to visit him in the final stage of his life with us, I went to visit him in Gita Nagari with some prior appointment because people had to be scheduled, you know, like coming in for a landing, that everyone could come at the same time. So I came the prior day and I was told that night he was up all night long because he was in so much pain because of the different cancerous growths that were in his body. He was in too much pain, he couldn't sleep. So I was told he may not be able to meet with you because hopefully he'll be able to get some rest. So I was ready that it was going to be canceled. And I was told he's ready to, you know, on schedule. So I came and I expected, you know, a very tearful, sad, you know, comforting kind of try to comfort Maharaj. That wasn't what the experience was. When I came into the room, Ekavir was there, you know, doing his hospice care kind of thing, rubbing his body in different ways and different ointments and stuff. And Maharaj had his hand like this, moving his hand, just lying down. And it wasn't a conversation, it was a monologue. He spoke for about 45, 50 minutes. I didn't have to say anything. I mean, I wanted to say something, but I didn't get to say some things. Because he was just speaking about all kinds of nice subject matters. It was kind of like Bhishma Dev speaking before the Pandavas. He just, you know, went on and on and on. I didn't even have to ask the questions that Yudhisthira asked. In the course of the explanation, he had his hand up like this, and he said, you may wonder why I have my hand up like this. He said, there's a cancerous growth that's pressing on my collarbone, and it's about the size of a baseball. You know, when you have, maybe you've had a boil, what that feels like, just pressing against your skin with the speck of a bone. It was like a baseball pressing against his collarbone. So he was rubbing it just so he could have his conversation with me. And then he went around, 360 around his body saying where the different ones were. And they were all over his body. So I was imagining how much pain he's in, but he wasn't, he was talking about it with a kind of detachment, like, I got a hole in my shoe, I have to get a new shoe or something. And at the end he said what he had intended to do, what he does with each person was, he would meditate on the person and how to serve the person, what would be some way that he could be of service to that person who came to visit him. So he knew that I was doing outreach in different venues, so he thought he would share with me what he had done with outreach in different venues. And that was, and he got so animated, it was, he wasn't dancing, but it was almost like he was dancing, although he was lying down. He was so animated from that mood of serving. So the pain, like the question was there earlier, someone that has, in transcendental consciousness, are they experiencing pain? They know what's going on with the body, but their consciousness rises above that. And speech correspondingly. What is elevating? A person who has purity within, they're consciously thinking how their speech can be elevating of benefit for the other person. We have all kinds of opportunities like that. You can say maybe challenges like that, where something is going on that we know shouldn't be going on. And we can, do the yada 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 program. Hey, why is this going on? And fault and all those kinds of things that don't at all help to elevate the situation. It just adds to more of the Kali Yuga sound vibration. So what kind of, if the thoughtfulness is there, what kind of speech is going to be result in elevation? And then one may take up a cause and say, that's wrong. But for the purpose of elevation, and the meditation is like that. The whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam is springing from that concern that the age of Kali is coming. Vyasadeva wants to elevate the victims of the age of Kali to a place where they're above the contaminations of the age of Kali. So that kind of sound vibration or speech would be good for us to learn from. We're not Vyasadeva, we don't have that capacity, but at least the spirit of what he did and the product that came from that. When we interact with others, one of the things that happens at ISKCON is we have devotees that are practicing Krishna consciousness in remote places, or we have young people that don't have peers their same age, and we all need friends, and we need the parents know this, that if their child doesn't have good devotee friends, they'll make the other kind of friends. And the parents are concerned about that, naturally. So they want to have good devotee friends. So one of the things for young people that are remote is to have telephonic association with others. So one of the rules in that dynamic is they read together. And at the end there may be, how's it going and the blah blah stuff, but at least in the beginning, just direct Krishna Katha. So when we meet one another, it's nice to inquire, how has your Krishna consciousness been going? How has your chanting been going? What have you been reading? Share with me some of the nectar of what you've been reading or your realizations. Kind of like we do when we have bhakti riksha groups. I'm just giving examples to help colorfully illustrate the principle. When we have bhakti riksha groups, one of the first things that's called the icebreakers, the facilitator says, okay, would anybody like to share one of the realizations that they've had or experiences that helped them in their Krishna consciousness this past week? And when the ball gets rolling, it's really nice. Some devotees have had some amazing experiences that you wouldn't even know about unless you asked the question. And I was reading something, and then something happened, and I realized something. It's a very nice way of using speech in a way that puts Krishna in the center of the relationship that one has with another or with others. And those that are purified by the process of devotional service, they're very careful about speech, because speech is powerful, properly or improperly used. And so steadiness of mind, steadiness of speech, and steadiness of bodily activities. So regulation is a very important item. Sensual steadiness, doing things that you know that are good to do, do them regularly. Even if it's mechanical, do them regularly anyways. And try to, for the purpose of purification, try to understand the purpose behind them. Just as one example, I mentioned this, we had this past Christmas holiday a little seminar on, 4-day seminar, very nice, with different speakers on prayer. So one of the segments was the prayers that we use every day, Prabhupada gave us, so we engage in prayers of different kinds. So there was a whole section on the prayers. And what do they mean? Sometimes Prabhupada, here's a Prabhupada story. There was a point in time when one of our leaders in our temple in New York, Pali Mardan, had kind of, he fell into Maya, put it mildly. He was in big Maya. And, one of the things that was a symptom of his Maya was he had, in succession of 3 years, Prabhupada's Vyasa-san became smaller and smaller. It was, you know, one of these, and then it became one of those, and then it became one of those. I didn't know what was going on. I was like happy in book distribution. I didn't know what the heck was going on. But one thing I noticed very clearly is Prabhupada had affection for him. Even afterwards, he had affection for him. But he was also correcting him. So right in the middle of the Jai Radha Madhava in Kirtan, Prabhupada stopped Jai Radha Madhava. He put his cartels down, and his face showed he was feeling anger. And he pointed like that, and to where Bali Mardan was seated. And he said, everyone was looking, said, you don't put the Bhagavatam in the same position as you. There was meaning behind what he said, but, you know, besides it's a principle. He was seated like, you know, in a cloth like that, and then right next to him was the Bhagavatam. So he's on the same platform as the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada was saying, indirectly, don't place me in the same platform as you. And then he went on, and then he didn't right away start up the kirtan. He started saying, we sing every day certain words from the prayers to the spiritual master. And And then he repeated one of the phrases and said, do you know what it means? And everyone, you know, at that point in time, everyone was frozen. You know the expression, like a deer in the headlights. And we were just... And then Prabhupada's voice escalated in volume and said, you do not know? You sing the song every day and you do not know the meaning? And if anybody knew the meaning, they probably had crawled under the rug already, because the mood was really intense. And I remember specifically, Vaikunthanath very boldly raised his hand and gave the meaning. And it was the right meaning, of course, you know. And Prabhupada said, that is right. And then you should, when you sing these songs, you should know the meaning. Don't just sing them without, mindlessly, not without knowing the meaning. And it was, he was strong. And then picked up the cartels and went on Jai Radha Madhava like it never happened. There were other situations that weren't so intense like that, but Prabhupada wanted us to know the meaning. So along with the regulation of following the standard things that we do for our devotional practices, we should know the meaning and, in his words, enter into the meaning, enter into the spirit of what it is that we're, the prayers that we're singing, or the in kirtan included, the prayers that we recite. Jai Radha Madhava, and so many prayers that we recite, the prayer of Guru Vastakam. What's the meaning? Each line, as you're saying the line, you meditate. If you don't know the meaning, learn the meaning. And meditate on the meaning as you're reciting. So, that's part of, that adds, you know, speech to bodily, to mind. You connect the three. And with the regulations. And do them very regularly. Just a little sharing. Part of my service is I travel in China. And as you probably know, there's no temples in China because you can't have a temple in China. So they have other things, but they can't have a temple. They have little gatherings. Now they figured out kind of a backdoor way of doing it. So, but many of the places, there isn't a morning program. And I can tell you, it's a huge difference for if you don't have a morning program. Well, some of you are maybe are beginning your Krishna consciousness, and I encourage you, establish a regular morning program, as is done in the temple. It may not be the same time as in the temple, but have a regular morning program. It will help increase purity in your heart and then in your home. Regular morning program. And all of the activities with some regulation. Those things that are good, do them regularly. I learned that as a teenager. Something good, don't just do it from time to time. Do it regularly. Make it an integral part of your life. So much that you miss it if it's not there, and if you let it go too long and you realize you gotta get back to that regulation. So this experience is not the same. So steadiness has these different symptoms. Steadiness in mind, steadiness in speech, steadiness in activities. So how do you get there? And the answer is you cultivate it. Nityam bhagavata sevaya. You regularly engage in activities that are beneficial, especially hearing and chanting activities. Just like this wonderful kirtan we just had, fantastic. Hearing and chanting of the association of devotees, and it's very uplifting. And there are different ways of doing the same. So, that's the, how to cultivate steadiness. What are the causes of unsteadiness? It's these impurities of heart. And the impurities of heart are there because of past free will decisions that we made that brought that impurity of heart. We are responsible for that impurity, and it's our responsibility to then address it. And the means is given to us. So until we become steady, we have to bear the turmoil of those anartas that are in our heart. But you don't just accept them and say, oh, that's nice. Like, what can I do? We try to practice abhyasa yoga yogena. In one of the japa retreats that I attended, I think Bhattahari was also there. In Ojai. You were there?
Yeah.
Rabindra Swarup Prabhu gave a whole, like, hour discussion on abhyasa. He practiced. He had just come from another japa retreat in upstate New York, and it had been called upon to do something there, and he shared kind of a rerun of practice. Practice makes perfect. Practice makes something that's not our conditioned nature present, especially through purity. And I want to end just by reading a couple of things from Bhaktivinoda Thakur on this topic of steadiness. And the quick summary, if you don't remember the details, the quick summary is enthusiasm. This is taken from Bhaktivinoda, a book by Bhaktivinoda Thakur on the six items that increase strength in bhakti, six items that debilitate bhakti. So the first one is enthusiasm. In Sri Hari Bhakti Vilas, carelessness is counted among the offenses against the holy name. In that scripture, the word pramada is described as inattentiveness. Those of you that may know Sanskrit a little bit, pramada means madness. Pramada, mad. And madness, spiritual madness, is we don't pay attention to what we're doing. Just, again, this mechanical thing. So don't be mechanical. Don't be mad. Be conscious. Be attentive to what you're doing and its meaning, like I was describing Prabhupada wanted from us. Sri Harinam Chintamani has further divided, by the way, that's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's book also, has further divided this inattentiveness in three ways. Apathy, inactivity, and distraction are three types of inattentiveness. So it's triple trouble. Inattentiveness. There are 10 offenses. The way that it reads in our 10 offenses, there's 10 offenses against chanting of the holy name, and I'm sure you've noticed Prabhupada put, and it's also considered to be an offense to be inattentive while chanting the holy name. He like adds number 11, as if 10 wasn't enough. But it's from Hari Bhakti Vilas. Inattentiveness, pramada. Inattentiveness. Inattentiveness is said to be the root of all the other offenses. So if you want to get rid of the offenses against the holy name, all 10 of them, just especially pay attention to this one. It will it'll give you the strength to take care of the other offenses against the holy name. And there are categories. Apathy. Oh, I don't care. That's one kind of inattentiveness. Laziness. Oh, I know, but I'm too lazy. We have to get over being lazy or complacency. When things are going along comfortably, tendency is, relax. Take it easy. Complacency. When things are, ouch, things are painful, we're more attentive. Krishna, help. So, don't wait for the pain, don't be complacent. Or distracted when chanting. Chant. And when chanting, don't do other things. Like playing a game, look at the computer. Some discussion I was having with some people and the amount of laughter that came from people that said, you know, basically saying, yeah, some part of my chanting in the course of time, I'm looking at the computer. And maybe with my other hand beside my bead bag, you know, moving the mouse and something, something. And it happens. I don't know. It happens. But that's a no-no. That's a kind of inattentiveness for sure. So, I don't care. Apathy. I know, but I'm too lazy. Or I'm distracted by something else. Avoid that. Be carefully guard against that. And the antidote, he says, you won't be able to do it. Even if you try to do it, you won't be able to do it without enthusiasm for devotional service. So now we're concluding that lighthouse off in the darkness, and you want to get from where you are to, let's say you're in a ship and it's stormy and the winds are blowing, the waves are high and everything's, woo, I want to get to land. Just follow the light in the lighthouse. Even if you move this way, just keep following the light. Move that way. Follow the light. So that requires keep your eyes open and have a little faith. Have an idea where you're going. And you'll get there. Have an idea of the goal. Something that Prabhupada taught very early. When you define the goal clearly, it's very easy to make steps to get there. And the converse is also true. Don't define the goal clearly. It's really difficult to take steps to get there. Like, what's there? And what's the step? How do you know? But you're going in the right direction. I'm, you know, sincerely misguided. Sincerely foolish. Lots of that in the world. So, the steadiness tomorrow during your 64 round day, even if it's the hill or the valley scene, don't become jubilant because it's going very nicely or unhappy because it's a valley and you're struggling. Continue towards the goal. It's purifying or purifying, and you're in Krishna's sound vibration. And as Shamsundar Prabhu said, stay in the association of devotees that strength of others chanting is a special opportunity. It's not every day that we get a chance to do like what we're going to do tomorrow. So chant in the association of devotees, and all day long almost, because it's how long it takes to chant 64 minutes. I'll just end with this. Start early. That means take rest early. Get sufficient rest so that you don't feel tired during the day tomorrow. And couple other small points. Eat a little less. I learned the hard way. Don't eat what you normally eat. Eat a little less. Because if you eat what you normally eat after breakfast or after lunch, you're going to be wiped out. I mean, your rounds will be mush. And they won't be as sharp. Eat a little less. Because we're just sitting in one place chanting. We're not, like, doing something. So it'll help you stay alert. And one other thing is, we'll request you all to observe Mona. Anyone not know what Mona means? Silence. Like, so from ideally it's from Mangal Arti on, but absolutely, you know, you have children, you gotta deal with your children, but deal with your children out there and not here. And from the morning class on, silence. Nothing but the holy name. And there's strength. My feedback says, that was really helpful. Not only not hearing others with distracting conversations over there, but just controlling the power of speech to just keep the sound of the holy name continuously going. If there's some emergency, that's an emergency, but otherwise, please observe that. And it will help. It will help the quality of experience. Okay, so any discussion? Comments? And if not, we'll have more share time. Yes.
One,
okay. Cheto darpana marjanam. What does that mean? The mirror of the heart becomes cleansed. You with me? Okay, give the microphone to someone else so you can. Do you know Shikshastakam 1? You know the verse? Okay. Shreya Kayarva Chandrika Vitaranam. The white lotus of good fortune is expanded. Shubha Da, the auspiciousness. The platform of devotional service awakens the inclination of the soul to again be connected with Krishna in service to Krishna, awakens. It's wonderful. One of the seven wonders of the holy name. So we just went through each of them. Vidyavadhu jivanam. Bhava Mahata Vagi Nirvapanam. Each of those, that was the subject. It extinguishes the blazing fire of material existence. It awakens transcendental knowledge within the heart. Just chanting. Transcendental knowledge awakens. We have the experience. Subjectively. Each of us. We don't have, not the most elevated platform of the most elevated souls, but we all have the experience. Realizations come. Knowledge of what something that we read some time ago becomes clear just from chanting. And then the rest. Patipatam pranamitasvadanam sarvatmasnapanam. That's what we discussed in the morning. Anything else? Okay. Yes? Yeah. Next.
Earlier we discussed about consciousness being transferred in some mistakes or thoughts. In the same line, what about songs that are recorded without creating consciousness?
No, but the consciousness of the person who vibrated that sound is carried. Like hearing the recordings of Prabhupada. It's not just information. He's imparting Krishna consciousness through that sound. Yes. Because behind the machine, there's a person. The recording technology permits the consciousness of the sound vibration of that person to be recorded and is transmitted through that medium. Okay? Whereas the parrot doesn't have the consciousness of taking shelter of Krishna when the parrot says, Hari Bol, or Radhe. It's just making the sound. Yes.
solar recording, and Prabhupada said and the same that. Prabhupada also uses the same example in his lectures for talking about a separated energy. That is his voice, or is it separated from him? So how do we reconcile both these things?
I'd have to understand more clearly what you're referring to. The separated energy, what does that mean? When Krishna speaks of Bina Prakritir Ashtada, does it mean that the microphone cannot act in a spiritual way? It's not spiritual, it's material. Let's take the tongue and the ear. They're material. Let's go to Canto 10, Chapter 87. Prayers by the Personified Vedas. I'm going to paraphrase how that chapter... It's the longest chapter in the whole of Canto 10. And it begins with Maharaj Parikshit saying to Shukadeva Goswami, I hope I'm on target with your question, but how something material can act spiritually is the question, yes? Yes, more or less? So, Shukadeva Goswami hears from Maharaj Parikshit saying, I'm ready. I've heard, my consciousness is fixed, I'm ready for that mystical snake bird or whatever it is to come. My consciousness is fixed. Then he says, but I have a doubt. And my doubt is, how did that happen? Because all that we've been doing is, I've been hearing using this material instrument, and you've been speaking using a material instrument. So how do we get to a spiritual place with two material things? Please clear my doubt. Shukadeva Goswami says, excellent question. It's such an excellent question that long, long ago, the sages were discussing the same question. And when they were discussing the same question, they said, this is such a nice question. It was discussed long, long ago. In other words, it's a classic question. It's a good question. And he refers to a discussion between the four Kumaras and the personified Vedas discussing the question. And the answer is really long. But the short of it is, everything that exists has a source of emanation. The absolute truth is the source of emanation of all things. And when those things that are emanated are used in service of the source of emanation, they take their original spiritual quality is restored because they come from that source. So the tongue that's used to vibrate spiritual sound and the ear that's used to hear a spiritual sound, it acts spiritually and can bring spiritual reawaken spiritual consciousness, although it's separated energy. It becomes again connected, like the iron put into the fire. It becomes hot, it becomes fire, although it's not fire. So spirit can act, matter can act in a spiritual way when used in service to Krishna. Yes, exactly. That's exactly the point. Exactly the point. Consciousness of the receiver makes the difference. The consciousness of the receiver gets acted upon even if they don't know that it's being acted upon. You know, like the plants that or the insects or whatever, microbes that hear the sound of Krishna's holy name, that it's being acted upon. They're not becoming self-realized, but it's being acted upon by that spiritual vibration. And we have the opportunity to become realized. An opportunity, whether we seize it or not. So the consciousness behind makes all the difference. So this can act depending upon, you know, if I'm a rock star or if I'm a Hare Krishna devotee, this is going to act differently. Although it's just dull matter. The consciousness behind is important for both the broadcaster and the receiver. This exactly fits in with the other topic, the Shabda. There's the place of broadcast, the spiritual world. There's the receiver, that's us. And then there's the, you know, what's being transmitted, Shabda. All three have to be, for perfection to be attained, all three have to be proper. So the work that we need to do is choose the right sources of Shabda and bring our consciousness purposefully, bring our consciousness to meet that sound vibration. Be good receivers. Because it's a descending process.
Mayavadi people who are, you know, doing this and not this and so all over the place.
Sure.
So they are contaminating the audience.
Yeah.
So, now, example is like, I'm just asking that if so if a person is like that, Mayavadi cooperating this kind of business, then later on in life, he becomes a devotee and starts understanding properly. So, although these people get contaminated before,
do they get any kind of benefit? Does it like work retroactively? Do you understand his question? Do you want to answer the question if you understand?
Contamination.
Do you want to answer the question? Because I don't understand it. Can you give me the microphone?
I don't know if I could answer it. I would imagine that they also have to become purified.
The Mayavadi Kirtan singer has to get some mercy from a devotee. Then they can become freed. But they don't get like spiritual merit for that, you know, they contaminated you by their kirtan. They need everyone, not just they, every living entity to come to the position of becoming purified needs the mercy of a purifying agent. And that's the devotee that's carrying bhakti within their heart. They need the association of bhaktas. Does that answer your question? Because I'm not sure what your question is. Why I'm asking if, does that answer the question?
Basically, like I was saying, like there is one Mayavadi who is doing kirtan and 100 people get contaminated because of his kirtan, and then 10 years later he becomes a devotee.
Well, who's he? The kirtan singer or the person?
The Mayavadi singer, the main singer. He becomes a devotee.
Okay.
So those 100 people who got contaminated by this self purification, will they get any benefit, any credit?
No. They need the association of devotee. Those 100 people that heard his kirtan. They need the association of devotee. They didn't get it. They won't get benefit because became a devotee. Because he got the association. It's not retroactive. That's sense retroactive. No. They need the association of the devotee. You want to add to that?
Yes,
yeah,
it's good.
Okay. Father Uttanapada?
Yeah, no, he was, well, it's almost like he's asking that question that even Dhruva was not yet a pure devotee, but he became a pure devotee and nevertheless he thinks, like his stepmother was mentioned, that his mother was a pure devotee.
Oh.
I don't know.
No.
This is the same scenario. It's,
yeah.
It seems like he's asking a question.
Yeah. Okay. Those people need your association, or our association, or someone, some devotee, someone is carrying bhakti in their heart. They need that association so they can become free not only of that contamination, but all other contaminations. Not vicariously he gets, so they get. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada.